This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Very special and timely guest in the think tank this week. This is Mike O'Neill. Dr. Lawrence Krauss, a renowned physicist, public intellectual, and public advocate for science. He's also currently host of a video podcast called The Origins Post Podcast. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks. It's always great to be on the show. I really enjoy it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Now, you know, science sometimes is sort of like the poor cousin. Science gets cut in sort of what you might call normal times. We don't seem to have a penchant for long-term consistent funding, but we are in obviously a crisis of the moment with the coronavirus pandemic. And while we may have cut basic science funding, we turn to science for an instant fix. What's your take on how science is faring in this pandemic?
Well, it's an interesting, you know, that's a really interesting question. I remember I had an editor of one of my first books who said, when, you know, people may dismiss science, but when the aliens come, the first people they're going to talk to are the scientists. And I think people, of course, still with surveys still suggest people, you know, trust scientists and want them to be, in some sense, governing policy in the case of a crisis that is a scientific one and not a political one. But it is fascinating at this time. I'm seeing more, with the countries become so polarized that you're seeing people ultimately attack scientists like Tony Fauci, who's the head of the National Institute for Infectious Diseases, if he disagrees with the president. And it's scary to see that, because you know, policy should be determined by policymakers and ultimately the public who elects those policymakers. So I don't think anyone is saying that the scientists should determine the policy, but they should make recommendations which are clear and which are at least well explained to the public before the policymakers make their policy. So I think that, you know, people are turning to the scientists. And the other thing that's important to realize, and what's really important about science that maybe distinguishes it from politics in another important way, is science involves uncertainties. And and a good scientist is willing to explain what the uncertainties are instead of saying we know what to do. In a crisis like this, which is unprecedented globally, there are many uncertainties. And there are many things we would like to know the answer to that we don't. And the scientists point that out. And it's very difficult for politicians, many of them, to work within those constraints of saying we really don't know what's going to happen. And you've heard, of course, we don't have to belabor this, but you constantly hear the president make statements that are definitive but absolutely wrong.
Well, I've watched you mentioned that in the context of Dr. Fauci, and I have really appreciated the way he has threaded a needle, because I watch him time after time going up to the podium and say, I completely agree with the president. And then in the rest of his follow-up discussion, in multiple syllable words, basically undermine what he had just said.
Yeah, he's been the head of that agency since 1984, and it's a scientific agency, but it works with the government. And he obviously knows how to thread the needle of working with elected officials very well, and somehow ingratiating himself is the right way to say it. But I don't think you can have been head of that an agency like that for many, many administrations, both Republican and Democrat, without knowing how to grease the wheels of the administration. But even so, I was disturbed to see today, for example, that it was determined that he needed security, because people and I've gone online just recently to check. And indeed, he's being attacked for when he does do what you said, gently disagree with the president. And that's worrisome if we live in times where the truth is so offensive. If it disagrees with the president, people feel they need to attack for it. I mean, it's happened in different in other contexts, but you don't, I don't need to say this, but I'll say it anyway. science isn't Republican or Democrat, or shouldn't be, or conservative or liberal. The world is the way it is, whether we like it or not. And it's the job of responsible scientists like Tony Fauci and others to say what they know and what they don't know equally well, but whether it's convenient or inconvenient.
Well, you know, you mentioned, you know, uncertainty. I think that's probably part of what people have a difficulty with. But in the case of the news as it was presented, we know, you know, 40% roughly of this country gets their news strictly from Fox News. And yes. For a month or so, every single night, they diminished the magnitude of this. They said it was going to, and the president said, you know, this, we have 15 cases and soon it'll be down to zero.
Yeah.
And at some point, the facts became so overwhelming that the president and then Fox News had to pivot 180 degrees. But it's pretty difficult for some of the public who've been conditioned to say, oh, this is just nothing. It's just like the flu. It's no big deal. It's being overblown by, I don't know, liberals and scientists, I guess. And all of a sudden you have to pivot.
Yes. And I think there's a difference between news and propaganda, and a good propaganda agency can pivot effectively. And unfortunately, I think many people are viewing at this stage in its incarnation that Fox News is more of a propaganda agency than a news agency. Trump pivots very well. He just denies having said what he said. But I think that that it's ultimately the biggest danger to the public. And this is what makes it so sad. The biggest danger to the public during a crisis like this is to be lied to. I absolutely understand that you want people not to panic, and you have to be careful and gentle and indicate what you're doing. And it is one thing is absolutely true is this will pass. We will get past this. And in many ways, it may improve the world in the future as ugly and disastrous as it is for people now. We may institute policies, global policies, scientific policies that allow us to be better positioned for the next pandemic or other global crisis. And I was disturbed. I mean, it's going to sound political, but I don't quite understand. Look, journalists are the front line in some of this and should have been and should be. They're the ones who should hold public officials accountable for not speaking the truth. And I've been disappointed. Even the journalists who've spoken up have not done it effectively. Yesterday, for example, I heard a journalist I saw online people hated him. He was a Fox News journalist because he pointed out that this administration had ended the pandemic emergency group of the National Institutes of Health and National and the Homeland Security that had been created under the Trump administration. And Trump said that's fake news. We never canceled. Well, they did. I mean, it's just. And at some point, instead of backing off, the journalists have to say, look, we need to move forward. We don't want to, you know, berate lies, but we need to have credibility here, and we need to hold you accountable to be credible. If we need to point out that there's been a change in what the government has been saying, and that the public should. That this change has taken place, and that the change has taken place because ultimately, and in this case, fortunately, the recommendations of the scientists are being taken into account. So that, you know, that this administration has changed their policies. They've been dragged kicking and screaming, but they've changed them not because they were leading, but because they were following. Because ultimately, people like Fauci and other people, the fact that groups of scientists around the world have been doing modeling of what may happen in the case of this pandemic to see what the consequences of inaction would be. Ultimately, those numbers have been so daunting that even the administration has changed their tune. And so, you know, ultimately the science wins because there's no way around it. But what you don't want to have happen is to be playing catch up. You don't want to have people ultimately say, well, yeah, this is the way things are because we now see so many people have died. We need to do something about it. But eventually there's no way around it. Eventually reality comes back and bites you, whether you like it or not.
We'll be back. We'll continue this discussion with Dr. Lawrence Krauss in just a moment in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are talking with Dr. Lawrence Krauss, a renowned physicist, public intellectual, and public advocate for science. One of the points that you just made in the last segment was essentially the science ultimately outs because the facts are the facts, and what's going to happen is going to happen, subject to our ability to change. And you were talking about the modeled estimates of which models being basically projections based on sets of assumptions. And in the case of how many people will get hit by this virus, we've got some experience, but the variable is the extent to which people successfully sequester in their homes and how many people break the rules. I noticed just in the last couple of days, we heard a radical shift in the president's projections. He said, well, all of a sudden, we're going to have somewhere between 100 and 250,000 deaths, which is was a staggering number in relation to the numbers that he had presented before. And it's not necessarily, I think, to most people who've done the modeling, those aren't really the high numbers. But I listened to that and I said, I wondered if there wasn't a certain amount of political, well, there was political positioning in that, because he coupled that with a statement that said, and if we keep it below 250,000, this is a massive success. He's basically moving the goalpost.
Well, yeah. And look, that's, I expect any politician would do that to some extent. And I, you know, what I don't, I wouldn't say you can't. I wouldn't fault this particular president for that. A politician is a politician and has to think about many things. And in fact, not just politics. I should stress that scientists, I repeat again, that scientists shouldn't be making public policy. They should advise policymakers and the public, and the policymakers and the public should decide what to do based on that advice. Namely, there are considerations other than science that matter. For example, it is true that there are economic and social considerations associated with shutting down the country, and politicians and the public have to take those into account. They have to take into account economic hardship, not just economic hardship, but how many people will die in one way or another because of lack of services. And so there are many variables here, and I think a responsible government has to take those into account. And scientists have to realize, when they're advising the government, that the government needs to consider other things, that what the scientists consider the most important item may not be what the government considers the most important item. And sometimes that's, you know, that's legitimate, sometimes it isn't. And I think if things are open and transparent, then the public ultimately makes that decision to reelect the government or not based on that. But so I don't want to discount the fact that not so much political. Obviously, there are political issues. You know, they're going to try and spin this as a win, no matter what. And I suspect any government would do that. But it's worth recognizing that there are many things that need to be taken into consideration, and many different ways of handling this. But the models point out, you know, the consequences of different ways of doing it. Again, assuming people obey the rules or don't obey the rules, depending upon how sophisticated the models are. And there are lots of great models and lots of things that try and at least illustrate for the public. So I think the public, once again, in this era of the internet, where you have access to a tremendous amount of information, you also have access to a tremendous amount of misinformation. And to try and sift the wheat from the chaff is part of the problem. And the public, you need to look at this and ask, does this agree with other estimates? Look at a variety of sources. Ask yourself, as I like to use the constraint that the publisher of the New York Times once said, which was, I like to keep an open mind, but not so open that my brains fall out. If someone's making a claim that seems so counterintuitive or counter everything of your experience, you've got to question whether it's realistic or not. But there are lots of good, you know, I put on my Twitter account, when I see something particularly useful, an exposition that's particularly good. Recently, there was one from something called Minute Physics that had a wonderful mathematical way of showing the data and whether we can assume we're quote unquote beating this COVID-19. So it's important for the public to try and get access to information. And any ethical government should give access to the information and explain why they're making their decisions instead of censoring information that demonstrates that their decisions are bad ones. And that's the difference between a responsible government and an irresponsible government.
Well, and I think the media has a role in this. My personal pet peeve, I wonder if you comment on this, that you see every story has a chart of how many people have died.
Yes.
And how many people are infected. We know that the number infected is a flawed number because it reflects how many got measured. And the number died, well, we're on an exponential curve. And it seems to me that as a number by itself, that doesn't mean a whole lot. We're in a number that's going up.
Yeah, no, I'm look, I agree with you in the sense that I'm disappointed. The media seems, look, in this era of clickbait and selling papers, the media seems to go for the lowest common denominator. What number, whether it's salacious in any news story, what number is going to grab the public? And deaths grab the public.
And death is certainly. We got a break now. We're coming up on a halftime break, a hard break here. Yeah, death is a hard number to dispute in terms of its significance. We will be back after the break with Lawrence Krauss in the think tank. And sirens call them on.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are with Dr. Lawrence Krauss, and he was rudely cut off by a commercial break. I would never cut him off myself, but in commercial radio, there is nothing as powerful as the need for commercial break. So you were in the middle of thought, Dr. Krauss. Let me let you finish it.
Well, I want to extend, you know, we were talking about deaths, but, and we're talking about number of cases. And I think there again, I want to point out the need to express uncertainties. 10 years from now, we'll have a great deal of data and be able to talk about what the fatality rate is and what the overall infection rates were for this in this pandemic. But right now we're in the middle of it. And there's so many variables that it makes it look, the scientists are doing the best job they can trying to monitor the situation and estimate things. But they're estimates. For example, when we talk about number of deaths, in some places, deaths where people don't make it to the hospital are reported as coronavirus deaths. In some countries, they may not report all the deaths. Similarly, as you know, it's already been said that probably 25%, again, and this is an estimate, at least that 25% of these cases don't manifest in any symptoms. So to judge the total number of infections and the total fatality rate, there are great uncertainties in all of these things. And there are uncertainties even in the reported number of deaths, because, as I say, it depends whether it's reported as a coronavirus death or not. And so the public, we need to make it clear that that scientists and government scientists and other scientists are trying to do the best they can with estimates. But there are uncertainties. When people talk about this virus being 10 times more fatal than influenza, that's an estimate, but it has uncertainties in it. And the wonderful thing about science is that we should express those uncertainties. And we're learning, it's novel. It's clearly novel in a number of ways in terms of the people type of people infects from old and young and who are most susceptible. And people are craving the knowledge of knowing the answers, but at this point, science doesn't know the answers yet. And I think we have to be clear that there are uncertainties. And when there are uncertainties like that, what it's prudent to do, I would suggest, is to look at the worst case scenarios and the best case scenarios and try and estimate where you want to lie. And that's, I think, what the government scientists have been presenting to the government. But hey, when it comes to death reporting, remember that you're right, absolutely right. It doesn't have, obviously it has significance to the people who died and some level of significance, but to overstress it is to misrepresent what we don't know and what is really important, which is how to respond both nationally, well, locally, nationally, and globally to ensure that this pandemic has the least impact on humanity that we can arrange.
You know, there's another thing, I think, in terms of communicating to the public, and that is it's very difficult for the public to understand things that are deterministic versus things that are probabilistic. For example, yes. It is in the media that older people are much more susceptible to severe consequences of this virus. But some people have interpreted that as if you're healthy in your 20s, there's no chance that you'll die. And that's not true either.
Yeah, that's not true, but we don't know. I mean, you know, I was just reading an article, and we're all in the process of trying to read and learn. And the amazing thing is the scientific community is working with incredible speed and globally in a way that I think almost no one has ever seen. These results, I was just reading in Nature magazine, a scientific magazine, that researchers, for the first time in some sense, are releasing their results before they write papers. In a general normal situation, scientists somehow get credit for writing papers, so that's the first thing they do. But here, in order to save lives, they're releasing their results. But you're absolutely right. We're learning that there are certain variables that can affect whether, regardless of age, whether you seem to be susceptible. Again, this is epidemiology, which is hard because of the limited ability to extract signal from noise. That's why I often say, people don't believe me, but I often say I'm a physicist because it's so much easier in biology. In a physics experiment, you can separate out the data from the signal from the noise. You can look at millions of events. In the real world, you're looking at tens or hundreds of events, and you don't know, you know, you'd see someone die at a certain age, but you don't know what chronic diseases they may have had or what specifics of their biology made them susceptible. And it's hard to generalize to the public in general based on one or two cases.
If you make that distinction between biology and physics, move to the social sciences and you're going to see real uncertainty.
Well, yeah, I didn't even mention that.
human beings have, if we can get something probabilistic, we think we're ahead of the game.
Yeah, exactly. And look, and the point is that probabilities are sometimes very non-intuitive, and especially to people who aren't comfortable with numbers and mathematics. And that's why, you know, exponentials are really hard for people to understand in general, because we tend to see things linearly. We measure distance linearly and our days linearly, and an exponential which increases at an increasing rate is something that intrinsically I think most of us are not hardwired to appreciate. And that's why it's really, I think it's been very important that Fauci and others explain the exponential nature of pandemic, that it's really quite simple. It's almost like paying interest on your house, that if you infect two people and then those two people infect four people and then four people infect eight people, each time that factor of two happens, you get a doubling, and the doubling of matter is a huge amount. When you go from 2 to 4, it may not seem like a lot, but when you go from 1,024 to 2,056 in any region, then suddenly people say, oh, suddenly there are 1,000 more people. It's the same process. It's just more people involved. And that's why, of course, social distancing, to try and reduce that exponential factor, is the key thing. And in this case, you know, a lot of people have said it, but I'll repeat it. The reason to do this is not just to reduce the growth of the exponential, and because sometimes, I mean, you could say if you let it grow quickly, then it'll kill off a large amount of the population and then it'll end quickly. So the whole pandemic will end quickly. But obviously that is not your goal. The goal is to try and save as many people as possible. And here you have something that isn't just purely science. You have something that's social science. You have a medical system that can accommodate a certain number of people. And therefore, one of the reasons to try and lower this exponential growth is not just, you know, pure numbers, but that you don't want the hospitals to be overwhelmed so that, you know, people are dying. But if you have 50 people dying each day, the hospitals can handle it at some level, but could try and save effectively as many people as possible. If you have 5,000, they're overwhelmed. And so there are social factors that come in as well as pure numbers.
An analogy might be the cars on the freeway. The cars are flowing freely on the freeway, but at some point, every additional car you add on the freeway all of a sudden, you've got a 10-mile backup because you added just a few more cars.
And in that case, it's even harder. It's well known that it's almost impossible to predict these things because of chaotic. We're where systems that are very complex can become chaotic, and you can only roughly estimate what's going to happen in a general way, but not in a specific way. Just like in this case, probabilistically, you can say how many cases of the virus may occur in general. You might expect to occur tomorrow in New York, but you can't say where they're going to occur or who they're going to occur to.
Yep. And you use a word like exponential, and a small proportion of the population knows exactly what you mean, and a large proportion hasn't a clue.
Absolutely. And I think it's incumbent upon scientists to try and use the techniques we can use to try and explain that in the clearest ways. And that's why, as I say, I referenced one of these online programs, because I thought they did a great job of explaining exponentials. There are a few of them, but also the government officials have to try and translate. One of the roles of government is to try and help, a good government is to try and help explain to the public what's happening so that they can justify policies and so that they can lead, and also they can get feedback from the public. That's what democracy is supposed to be about. Very, very rarely do governments actually lead. They generally follow. But in times of crisis, I think what's really important is to explain the situation as it really is so people can effectively protect themselves as well as possible, but to try and provide support and guidance and evidence that the government is doing everything they can to try and help.
Did you see where yesterday the governor of Georgia just announced that he now understood, he didn't know yesterday, but now he knows that the virus can be transmitted by people who are not showing symptoms?
Yeah, no, it's really, I mean, you're seeing, well, in some ways you're seeing, as you expect in any crisis, you're seeing government at its best and government at its worst. Yeah. You're seeing some officials who are doing amazing jobs, not only explaining things to the public, calming them when necessary and leading, and other ones that are just, you know, I saw the governor of Florida, who just just to move away from Trump, the governor of Florida is an example of a bad government. Not only did he refuse to recognize the need to social distance for the longest time, but suddenly today recognizes it. And then in terms of kind of leading to help, I understand this cruise ship has come in and people are concerned, and he's willing to take off the Floridians, but not anyone else. And that kind of action makes you somewhat concerned. I mean, it's not a scientific-based action; it's a completely political one. So, it's unfortunate when people look. I'd rather have people say, "Oh, I suddenly realized this problem and do something about it," than do nothing. But we have to realize that at some time later on, people are going to be held accountable for lying.
Or to know when it's time to defer your judgment to somebody who has relevant expertise.
Absolutely. And
could we hold that? And because we're getting near.
Sure.
And we'll bring you back for a final concluding segment in the think tank with Lawrence Krauss in just a moment.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we are here with Dr. Lawrence Krauss, who was in the middle of a thought when I cut him off once again.
Well, I think what's important here is to what you just said really at the end, that the other duty of government is to get the best advice possible. I think that's it. We can't expect our political leaders to know everything or to be experts in everything. And they should make that clear. But it's incumbent upon them to at least get the best advice they can and to try and assess that. And that's really, I think, the role of government. And one of the reasons to make it clear, I was an advisor to Obama's campaign back in 2008. And one of the reasons I did was impressed me is that they have 30 different groups of advisors from in every different area, from science to economics to defense. And you can tell, I think, the quality of the government by the quality of the people they bring in. A good leader should bring in people who know more than them about any given subject. And I guess you can make your own judgment about this particular government.
Well, you know, that brings me to something that I've been wanting to ask you. There is a drug called hydroxychloroquine that was used in malaria, and that there became kind of a political groundswell. This may be the giant, you know, cure for everything. I looked into this. I talked to people who are involved in medical research who said, among other things, there has been absolutely no random controlled experiment on this at all. The only thing that was done was one study with 30 people in China, and the experimental group who got the drug actually did slightly worse than the control group who did nothing. But politically, and this part I do understand, in a crisis like this, political leaders get credit for quote unquote doing something as opposed to doing nothing. And the president pushed this, Governor Cuomo pushed this as well. There's evidently going to be some kind of a study. And I, for one, would be a lot more comfortable if it was the scientific community saying that this is a productive area for research.
Well, you know, I think you've hit the nail on the head once again. There is, as far as I can see, everyone has made it clear that there's no evidence whatsoever that this works. I think the politicians and made a political calculation. What's the downside? If it doesn't work, you don't hear about it. If it does work, you're a hero.
It's even worse than that. I think that downside, they'll get credit for doing something even if it doesn't work.
Absolutely. They'll get credit for saying we're trying everything. Yeah. And I think it's almost criminally irresponsible. Namely, you can argue that, you know, bloodletting is going to help someone, you know, with cancer or something like that. And you can make claims. And in the end, if they trust that and don't take appropriate action, you're criminally endangering them. And I think to make claims, and that was one example where, you know, Donald Trump said, I have a hunch that this is going to work. Well, I mean, that should, once again, the journalists in the room are responsible for saying, what experience do you have that suggests that your hunch is something that anyone should listen to? And in a time like this, people are susceptible to politicians trying to demonstrate they're doing something, even if it's not the right thing. And unfortunately, the ones to take them to task at this point are the journalists. And I'm concerned when a journalist does try to take the president or any other public figure to task and they cut them off, other journalists change the subject and because they don't want to be excoriated too. But when it's an important issue, There are norms of behavior, and I think that the journalist community should have a rule that when an important question is cut off, the next journalist doesn't move to another question, but the question keeps getting asked until it's answered.
I don't know. I think you may have just given me a topic for the next show, which is the responsibility of journalists in this area.
Well, I think it's, you know, there are times of crisis that and it's been well known. I mean, journalism is in some ways the last bastion of a healthy democracy. And responsible journalists, responsible politicians, and responsible public. And ultimately, you know, I've said this to you before. I think as a teacher, I tend to think the answer is always information and education. There's an old saying that if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. But ultimately, in times like this, I think information is what separates ultimately a healthy democracy from either an autocracy or a failed democracy.
And I guess it come back to, it's not only information, and this is the scientific model, a willingness to change your mind in the face of conflicting information, which you would take as an article of faith, I know.
Well, no, I never use faith. but an article of science, that's the whole point. As Richard Feynman once said, as scientists, your job is to, if you have an idea and a theory, you try and find prove it's true, but you work equally hard to prove it's false. That's the whole point. You have to be willing to try and prove an idea of yours false, because that's the only way we make progress. And you know, you said it beautifully. We have to be willing to change our minds. And scientists, that's the great beauty of science, is to be wrong and to understand you're wrong and to move on. It's not so easy for politicians to say they were wrong. And unfortunately, you know, the public is probably treats a politician better when they deny having said something than if they say, you know, I said something and I was wrong. And because of that, I guess the politicians are, there's great motivation for the politicians never to admit being wrong.
That seems to me maybe a failing in the body politic, because it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah, of course. I think we don't have a we in so many ways could improve our democracy, and it comes down in many ways to the public. We have a responsibility in some ways, if we're voting, to educate ourselves. We have a responsibility to vote. I was shocked to hear the president say on a TV program the other day, one of the awful recommendations that they cut down in this coronavirus bill was to increase the voting, to make it easier for people to vote. Because he said if it's what he actually said was if more people vote, then Republicans won't get elected. But whether that's true or not, that you can make a statement that having fewer people vote is a good thing, or having fewer people know what the issues are is a good thing, is bad. So the public, it all, you know, ultimately we get the leaders in some sense we deserve, and we have a responsibility in a democracy. You know, in Australia, you get fined if you don't vote, and we have a responsibility to, in some ways, educate ourselves if we're going to have responsible leaders. And everyone has a responsibility in a democracy, and that's the way it works. That for better or worse, that's the way it works. The leaders have a responsibility to get good advice, to dispense it and work accurately. But the public and the scientists have a responsibility to provide the best possible guidance to the government and to the public. Let me say, they have a responsibility to educate the public. At least some scientists do, but the public has a responsibility.
Thank you very much, Lawrence Krauss. We will be back next week on another subject in the think tank, probably on this same or similar subject. It's dominating all our wavelength at this point. See you next week in the think tank. The morning lights, the streets that lead.